This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
I'm announcing officially that Iran has now joined the countries which have nuclear power. This is a very historic moment, and this is because of the Iranian people and their beliefs, and this is the start of the progress of this country.
President of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, speaking earlier this week, NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore joins us. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Scott.
Dan, a number of important developments on what seems to be the gathering face-off over Iran and nuclear power. Firstly, certainly the statement by the president of Iran, he says our country has joined the nuclear club. There is a statement on Friday that Israel was going to be annihilated. And there have been reports in the media in the United States and in Europe that the United States is drawing up plans for military action against Iran.
Well, the United States denies that it's drawing up plans for an attack. However, if you read some of the revelations by Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker this past week, what you will learn is that they used to speak of an attack as being only a contingency. Now it's been upgraded to its operational planning as opposed to just contingency planning. I think there are desperate little games being played by an administration that doesn't quite know how to deal with Iran. And one minute they say, no, we never attack them. And next minute they say that all options are still on the table. That is diplomacy as it's practiced today.
Aren't they at the point of they can't conscientiously rule out any option, can they?
No. They can't rule it out. On the other hand, they don't want to give the impression that they are ruling it in or planning or going to do it because after the experience with Iraq, it is considered in the administration not to be a good idea to be too threatening and because you never know what the consequences will be. And so they're delicately poised in saying there will be consequences if they don't give up their nuclear pretensions. On the other hand, no, we're not going to start a war. You must be crazy to think so.
Moving on to Iraq, there have been more American deaths in Iraq in the first 2 weeks of April than in the entire month of March, and still no apparent progress in establishing a government.
That's right, and it reaches a point where if you don't get it pretty soon, that in itself has the effect of stimulating more and more violence. The question is, at what point do you say, we're not establishing a government, let's have a civil war? They're no closer to having a government. I mean, the Shias really believe that they're not getting what their majority should give them. Mm-hmm. And so they're stuck, and they seem to remain stuck.
At the same time, an increasing chorus of retired U.S. generals have called for the resignation of Secretary of Defense Ronald Rumsfeld or his replacement by the president. What do you make of this chorus now?
That's quite remarkable because people who get to be major generals, lieutenant generals, and full generals have really learned a mystique that there is civilian control of the military, and if civilian control wants it, if the Secretary of Defense wants it, you do it and you go ahead. Somehow, this proved to be too much for some of these people. They apparently don't like the Rumsfeld's style. They don't like the way he constantly seems to be beating on them to do things they can't or shouldn't want to do. And the president now says, well, he has full confidence in Rumsfeld. But if this continues, and if it spreads to the people in the field now, that one general after another, after leaving office, says that Rumsfeld should be out, then we're going to have something possibly serious happening.
As you read through the lines, are any of these generals second-guessing? Is it clear to you that they voiced their objections at privately to the secretary or other people in the defense establishment at a time when it might have counted for something?
Some of them have indicated that they voiced this privately. Others have not so indicated.
Dramatic week at the trial of Zacharias Moussaoui, the confessed September 11th co-conspirator. The jury heard some of the audio tapes from the cockpit recorder of that flight that crashed into rural Pennsylvania, and Moussaoui himself took the stand.
And Moussaoui took the stand, and it's hard to understand what goes through his mind and what he thinks he's going to accomplish. He boasts about the fact that he has been with al-Qaeda, which has inflicted so much pain. He seems to regard inflicting pain as being an end in itself. And you wonder about it. If other people in al-Qaeda are really as sadistic as this guy seems to be, then we're really in for a very long and awful war.
I want to ask about events in France and through the rest of Europe, because after weeks of protest in France, President Jacques Chirac has announced plans to rescind a controversial youth labor law.
Yes.
At the same time, there's no announcement about another policy that might help solve the youth unemployment problem.
Yeah. And rather interesting that this was achieved by people power, all these people marching. Mm-hmm. Around the same time, a lot of people were marching in America on immigration policy. The French achieved what they wanted. Chirac has withdrawn that law. Whether the Americans, the Hispanics, and others who want to achieve what they say, today we march, tomorrow we vote, whether that will happen is another thing. But to come back to France is really only an indication of the problem of Europe today. Delicately poised, they seem not to be able to do anything to improve their economic condition. Italy has had an election with things a little too close for comfort for anybody, mm-hmm. and you wonder what's going to happen there. Germany is no longer quite the economic powerhouse that it used to be, and this great Europe that was being created now suddenly seems to be stuck a little bit.
What happened? Because it was not so long ago the thought was a common currency, a democratic tradition. All of these modern industrial societies were, in fact, going to zip past North America.
The trouble in Europe today that is still living by a social contract, giving all kinds of benefits to people because Europe was that way. The pressures of competition today call for you to withdraw some of these social gains and open up to an open free market. People are resisting the free market. They really like having health care and pensions, all those things right there for them. And so we're seeing Europe in the throes of entering into free enterprise. Mm.
We might mention that things seem a bit different and maybe even more than a bit different in Great Britain.
Britain, yes. It used to be that Britain was the sick man of Europe, and now all of a sudden Britain has pulled out of this pretty well and is in pretty good shape economically.
Don't want to let the week in review end without a mention the death this week of the Reverend William Sloan Coffin.
Yes.
Chaplain at Yale University for many years, senior minister of the Riverside Church in New York City, best known as really a lifetime of activism. You knew the Reverend Coffin.
I knew him. He was a friend. He had so many friends. And what I knew about him, that he had two compelling interests in his life. One was to speak up for poor people and speak up for civil rights. The other was to speak up against atomic weapons and try to get disarmament in the world. He made rather little progress in each, but he was really much beloved by those that he worked with and those he knew.
Thank you, Dan Shore.
Pleasure.